stop persistence as our history is real. A strong will can shine like gold.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 61. And I'd like to give a shout out to the Bring Downs. These guys do a lot of singing around Appalachian rock, and I'm glad they provide the intro music for us. And today our guest is a former Independence High School athlete. He lettered and starred in three different sports at Independence High School. Mr. Tim Justice, glad to have you, Tim.
Thanks, Coach. It's glad to be here.
I can remember when you were about 6 or 7 years old up at the softball field at Warren Williams on Park Avenue. Your dad and I played softball together, and you were a little old kid running around with a big glove under your hand. The glove was adult size and was too big for your hand, and carrying a ball. And you'd aggravate all the players, throw you the ball or throw it up in the air. And you were a pretty regular guy up there. And was that your first introduction to sports?
You know, I don't know if I ever remember being introduced. I think it was just a family thing. You was born and you went into sports.
Your dad, did he play any school sports?
Not that I know of. I think Dad actually quit school in around the 7th or 8th grade.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I was in a mining camp. I mean, so he was kind of out and went and started to work and went into mines probably 14, 15 years old and
yeah,
been on.
Well, he was a good softball player. He played shortstop for the team I was on, and we had a pretty good team, and had a cannon for an arm, man. I mean, that guy, he could, and then I heard he was a pretty decent basketball player too on some of the pickup games around.
Yeah, Fred Persinger talks about him a lot. He said he was the only 6-foot guy that ever played like a 6'8 guy.
Really?
Because I think you guys used to have that league in Beckley. I think he played for WJLS or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and Fred was on that team, and yeah.
When he played for us, Billy's boys, he was a good shortstop. He wasn't a great shortstop. He's a pretty good sized guy, but he was a good shortstop. And like I said, he made up a difference with the arm. He could. I played second base a lot, trying to turn a double play. Man, you had to handle the heat first from him. Sometimes he'd throw pretty hard, and he'd only be about 20 feet away from you. But good guy. And I know your brother, Bo, was an exceptional basketball player in high school. Was he All-State?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think he was a co-captain, actually.
Really? Yeah. And he played at Mullins.
Yes, he started at Independence, and things didn't work out good, and he ended up at Mullins for I think that was when Coach Polly, I think Coach Knuckles had just stepped away to be a principal, and Coach Polly coached him and another kid from Independence, Kip Chandler.
Uh-huh. And then your brother Doug, he was kind of like you. He played, as a youth, he played football, wrestled, baseball. What was the first sport you played, organized sport?
I assume baseball. I can remember minor league. They just started minor league down at the, they call it the old Slab Fork Field. It's a log yard now. Like you pass the old pretties and cut down the hill like you're going towards Mullins.
Yeah.
Sit there on the left. And then, what was it? Al Pittman got the field up in Affinity. He got that donated. And then like a few years later, we went up there in Little League. And it's still there to this day.
And who was your first coach? Do you remember?
Tommy Trail, I think. I'm not for sure. Dad always had a part in coaching.
Yeah.
As much as we hated that. He was the coach on a lot of the Little League teams. I only had a handful of coaches growing up. Like I said, Tommy Trail was the first one. We played for Hart's Cabinets. They had about four or five of the little teams down there. Like, I think it was like 7, 8, 9 maybe. Uh-huh. And then you had the Little League down there.
And then Midget League football, did you play that?
The Midget League football probably was the pillar of all the sports. Jim Bowman probably put more effort into any of the sports that he's probably the guy that got me to do everything. Uh-huh. Jim Bowman would have a pickup truck and probably haul 10 kids to practice every day. And Jim is the one who got everybody in wrestling at, down at Sophia at the YMCA. I remember, I can't tell you how many times Jim picked everybody up and took them home at the end of the day. Him and a guy passed away, Mr. Westmoreland, he died at a young age. He was the football. I mean, you had a group of guys, but I ain't kidding you. It seemed like you had about 5 or 6 parents that took everybody everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know Eric Fritz helped some with that. Yeah, that team too. And yeah, Jim had that started out at the Y. It was a Crab Orchard team, and then they split and made a Sophia team because they had enough kids, you know, from that area. And he was instrumental in getting a lot of interest out that direction. But when you came to Park Junior High, you lived over at Green Valley area, didn't you? And that was back before they had they didn't have Independence Junior High, did they?
No. When I went to school, it was Sophia Junior High, and we lived like right in the well, at the Valley, and you could either go to either one.
Yeah.
And I ended up at Park because of my brothers. My oldest brother was a hoodlum in school. Everyone loved my sister, and then Douglas come through, and he was a wild Indian too. So it was like I was going to go into, I was a no-win situation. And plus, most of my friends were going to Park. So that's how I ended up going to Park, because of my brother.
Get a fresh start.
Fresh start, right.
Well, when you were at Park, I had the pleasure, I guess I coached you in football and wrestling and track.
Yes.
And that was during the time we had some good athletes going through Park. And you played your ninth grade year, you played 4 sports. You played football, you wrestled and played basketball, and you did track. And I remember the football, I don't know whether you've ever heard this story or not, but Coach Lambert was the head coach, and he we'd only lost one game in 3 years, but Chris Gross and that bunch, they went on to the 10th grade. And it only left 2 starters from the previous year, you and Mike Thomas, I think. And you guys were on defense most of the time. And we had we were expecting about 50 guys out for football. We didn't have a trainer at that time. A trainer, we hadn't been hired. And the Friday before the season started, the season, we were going to start practicing in August on Monday, Lambert, Coach Lambert, got the job at Woodrow Wilson as assistant coach for the Flying Eagles. And so here I am, assistant coach, got 50 boys coming out on Monday and don't have a clue anybody. I couldn't even think of anybody we could get. I go in and talk to Lester Vault, the principal, and I said, what are we going to do? Football starts Monday. And he said, well, it looks like you're the head coach. And I said, well, I wasn't really. We need another adult. And we couldn't think of anybody that had that at the school. We couldn't think of anybody from the past. And I called a buddy of mine, Phil Bartram, who I'd worked with in wrestling. And I knew he was a good with kids. And I called him. I said, Phil, won't you help me out with a football team? And he said, when does it start? And I said, Monday. And he said, I don't know anything about football. And I said, well, I just need another adult, you know, we got to split these guys up, Simon. So he said, well, I'll come out. And I said, well, so we actually got together that weekend and kind of planned the week and went over some things. And with 2 starters back on offense and defense and a new, brand new coach, and we had a pretty good football team, didn't we?
We sure did. I think, didn't Coach Turner come out and end up helping some?
Yeah, he came out and helped. He actually officially was the trainer, but he helped coach.
I didn't realize he was the trainer.
Yeah, he kind of helped do coaching and stuff too.
I guess back then the trainers didn't do as much as they do now. If you got hurt, put a little dirt on it, you are. Yeah,
they didn't have to do the training right. like that they have to now. But the first game that we were playing, Beckley Junior High had a real strong bunch back, pretty seasoned team, and that's who we played the first game. And they were just kind of licking their chops, you know, knew we were pretty inexperienced. And Coach Lambert had been noted for not passing very much because we didn't have to. When you had running backs like Chris Gross and some of them, you didn't pass a lot. And so on paper, it really looked like Beckley Junior High was going to thrash us pretty good. And we ended up passing quite a bit, not like they do now, but passing for that time. And I think we scored 3 touchdowns, you passing to Mike Thomas on a little old flare pass, and they weren't ready for that. They couldn't cover it, and we ended up winning that game. And the coach from Beckley Junior High came over and said, "When in the heck did Park start passing?" And I said, "Today." But we had a good season. We lost one game to Bluefield. And that was another team that, you know, had a whole lot of talent, one of the Isabel boys. And we were right with them, 18-16 going into the fourth quarter. And then they grounded out another one and beat us. But other than that, that's the only game we lost. And you were the quarterback, and we did quite well. Now, basketball, tell us how you handled the basketball and wrestling.
That was fun times. Usually, you know, back then, somehow or another, I guess you had a job, and Coach Honaker helped you, and y'all seemed like y'all staggered the practices. I don't know if y'all did that on purpose or that's how it always was, but I was able to go to wrestling. Then after wrestling, then the basketball team would come in. Maybe the girls, well, I don't know if the girls practiced then or if it was in a different time of the year, but somehow or another, you guys always staggered them, and I just kind of bounced from one to the other. Very, very few times that I can remember that there was actually a wrestling match and a basketball game.
Yeah.
And I do remember a couple of times my oldest brother, Bo, would take me to a wrestling match, and then I would leave the wrestling match and go straight to a basketball game.
Yeah.
But as far as I know, I mean, like I said, I don't know. Lucky. I guess I was just lucky.
Yeah, we wrestled a lot of weekends in the basketball. We usually didn't play on weekends, too. We didn't have too many matches during the week, and so that kind of helped. But doing both of them, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I remember I had some, they called it some neurology problems when I was in junior high, and I actually had to wear a heart monitor and stuff. And I think what we come down to, too, is I was literally running so much. I mean, wrestling's a pretty tough sport, and then you run in basketball. You know, the heart rate was down, you know, high 30s, so they kind of was leery about that, but they didn't realize what I was doing, you know, about running all the time. So it ended up just clearing itself out. I think I was just pushing your body to the limit.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
When you got in high, well, we won the football counties, we won the basketball, and that basketball team, that's when Shea Fleener and Ryan Cole Sert done those guys.
Yeah, them guys are tough. I was kind of like on the team. I played defense. I was the fundamental guy. I would do all the bad stuff. And I mean, Ryan Cole Sert and Shea, man, they were good in high school, but they were just as good or better. And I mean, I think Ryan was almost dunking in the seventh grade. And that was like, back then, that was unheard of. Him and Shea dunking almost in junior high. You know, you look back 30 years ago, that don't happen a whole lot.
Nah.
And they were super good. They were all good. We had a really good team. And we had a great coach. Don't forget who our coach was.
Bobby Boland.
Yes.
Yeah, he turned out to be pretty good.
Yeah, I tell him all every time I see him, I was like, well, I'm the reason you are what you are. I think it was really his first season he coached us. That's when he started. So,
yeah.
We had a great coach and great players. How else could you not win, right?
And we had a decent track team. Bobby helped me coach some. I think we were the coaches then, and I don't know how long. Then he took over after I quit, and I don't know how long he coached track. But then when you went to high school, you went to Independence, and you actually was a starting quarterback for Independence as a 10th grader, weren't you?
Yes. And, yes, I was. It kind of fell into my lap. I mean, not to knock any of the guys that, you know, that maybe I started over But I was just, they had a 3-year starter. I think his name was Mike Chamberlain. Great quarterback, and he had just graduated, and it was kind of open. And we had a couple upperclassmen that were going to be like seniors that year. And I ain't saying I was any better than them, but, you know, if you got two guys that are even, you want the guy to start for 3 years or the guy that's going to be one and done. So I kind of, you know, Coach Cuthbert took a chance on me, and, you know, I played football my whole life, and Coach Cuthbert knew my family. And
if y'all were 6-3-1, I think, that first year. And so that wasn't bad. Then the next year, of course, starting quarterbacks back, you guys were 7-3, and 7-3 as a senior. And you made the playoffs that senior year, but Greenbrier West had they were loaded that year, and you guys played them in the regular season, and they thumped you pretty good. But sure then did. You had to play them the first round in the playoffs, and it was closer, but...
Well, actually, it was a heck of a game. We, like I said, I remember I got knocked out in the regular season game maybe right after halftime, and it got ugly after that. And I think another kid got hurt too, but a couple key players kind of got hurt, so it kind of got lopsided pretty quick. But in the playoff game, it was 0-0 at the end of the third quarter. And we literally, Cuthbert, we, like you were talking about passing the ball then, we were literally... We weren't supposed to be very good at all. Kind of like what you said, your first year coaching in the ninth grade. We would spread them out, and we would literally do like the Buffalo Bills and call stuff at the line. Coach Goddard was over there. We was goofing off at practice one day, and he starts doing these stupid, crazy signals, if you know Coach Goddard. We start picking up on what he's saying, and we start calling plays from the line. Well, by game two, we're doing it the whole game. We're literally doing it the whole game. So we changed things around right after we played West completely to where we didn't really run the ball any. We were basically just throwing little flats, little flares. Had a great run back, went to Marshall, Freddie Teasty. Great. You had some, just David Hart was there. He was a tight end. He may not have been the fastest guy, but dang, Blaine, you get it close to him, he'd catch it. And so we just literally just kind of nick-picked him, and we'd get all the way down to like the 15-yard line, but we couldn't score.
Yeah.
And then... Next thing you know, I dropped a punt, and they killed us.
Now, Jason Buckland played.
Jason Buckland was a receiver.
Was he on that team? Yeah.
After they scored the first touchdown, he literally took the ball all the way to, like, the 15-yard line. We were getting ready to score again, and we couldn't. Just couldn't get in on there. I think I'm not for sure if they won it that year or got beaten the finals.
I don't remember. I don't know.
They may have won it and won it in basketball that year, too, Greenbrier West. Huh. One of the two, they were right there. I'd have to check on it, but they were in the finals.
Yeah, but then in wrestling, you as a sophomore, you went to the qualified for the states, 140 pounds, and won a couple matches in the state tournament. And then as a junior, you made it to the finals, championship finals. Got to come out during the playing of Rocky, and. You got beat in the finals. And as a senior, you came out, same class, 140-pound class. You must have had to lose a little bit of weight to get there. And you got in the finals, but you had to wrestle R.C. Anderson, who was from Cameron, and he was a two-time champion at that time, three-time champion.
That made us fourth. He was the same.
And he ended up beating you in the finals, but he ended up winning the Dutton Award, which is the best wrestler in the state of West Virginia, regardless of what class. Now, what was the score when he pinned you in the finals? Do you remember?
Let me tell you a story. I'm back up here for a second. When I was a sophomore, I always wrestled, but I never was like into it like some guys.
Yeah.
And... I remember sitting up in the bleachers my sophomore year, and they were doing the Parade of Champions. And me and one of my coaches back then was sitting up at the top, and I said, man, I'm going to be there next year. And just so happened the chips fell like they was, and I was able to make it to the state finals my junior year. And the guy who beat me was actually a guy that David Hart beat the following year. His name was Hickman. And he ended up being a two-time state champion.
He was from Warwick County, wasn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then my senior year, R.C. Anderson, listen, I didn't get a vote, but I voted for him the best wrestler. He beat the daylights out of me. He was better than me on his feet, on the ground. There was no – I remember I looked over at Coach Gilson, and I was like, Coach, what do you want me to do as a third period? He's beating me 10 to nothing or something. It was bad. And he just looked at me, and he just threw his hands up like, I don't know what to tell you. So I tried neutral, and I actually threw the kid once, but we went out of bounds. And other than that, he would have tech-followed me. The first time I'd ever been pinned in wrestling.
The finals of your senior year.
My last match, I was sitting there and I remember bridging it, and I looked up the clock and I looked at the score and I looked at the clock and first time I'd ever tried to pin myself, and here he got me in a dang headlock choking me out, and I'm trying to pin myself and it's like he wouldn't let me. I'm like, just get this over with.
But so in football, your senior year, you were second team all state. Yeah. Quarterback, and then in wrestling, of course, some people say you're all state if you finish in the top six. Some say you're all state if you win it. I mean, I don't know. But that's pretty good to be in the finals 2 years in a row.
You know, it was. You know, the bad part about that, Coach. My junior year, I was the only kid to make it to the finals, and the next year, I want to say we had maybe six kids in the finals. And still didn't win the state championship. Wow. As a team.
And I've seen teams win it with four wrestlers. Yeah. In the past.
I mean, it was just crazy how good, I mean, how balanced. I wouldn't say how good, but you know what I mean? How it was just amazing. And you look back and you're like, God, we had six. I think we only had one to win it. But still, a lot of your points are before you get to the semis.
Yeah. And but now in baseball, you guys had a pretty good program too. And your first year, Independence won state championship, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
1990.
Sure did.
Yeah. And did you get to play much that year?
I was the guy that played everywhere.
Utility type.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I think I got an award for being a utility. But I was mostly a pitcher. I could throw it. You know, that's pretty much what I did. But in the state, in the actual tournament, I ended up playing first base because we had one of the kids got hurt. And so I ended up playing first base. So I got the $2 tour by Coach Goddard playing first base the week before the state tournament.
And in the second year that you played, in 1991, you had a 7-1 record, 414 batting average, and I think your brother Doug played with you that year. It wasn't that year?
He played as a sophomore, and they didn't get very far, and then they were state runner-ups the year before I got there, and then he was a senior that year that we won it in 90.
Okay. Yeah. But you were ended up being first team all state as a junior.
I really don't know. I mean, I know it sounds, I don't want to sound mean or bad or take it that way, but awards never really went to me. So I couldn't tell you what I made. Somebody told me last year that I had some kind of record up there. I just never was into that. That wasn't how we was brought up.
Well, you were.
Yeah. I'll take your word for it.
And then your third year, when you was at a senior, you had another good year, mainly as pitching, and you were second team All-State. I don't know why you weren't first team that year, but you ended up second team. So, I mean, that's a pretty good resume for high school. All-State football, All-State wrestling, All-State baseball. I mean, that's not bad. But you weren't a real big guy. I mean, you probably normally probably weighed
50.
Yeah. And did you get any? Were you interested in going to school after high school? Or
no, not really. I went to a school, Ohio Valley, and I played there and pitched some. And it really wasn't a very good school for me. They didn't have a lot of heart down there. We'll just say that. I mean, it was just a different. I'm a home person. I like home.
Yeah.
So I just didn't fit in. I never was a school person. I would rather go out and work or do something than I would school.
So when you left Ohio Valley, what did you start into?
I actually kept going to school. I went all the way up to my third year. I probably like another year to graduate. And I got hired at UPS. I was working, you know, once I quit the baseball thing and come back here to the Southern Community College, I just kind of started out maybe doing some construction work, maybe worked at Walmart for about 6 months. Went back into construction, and then I got a job at UPS. And once I did the numbers, I realized I'd probably end up at UPS, so I quit school.
Now, were you married at this time? Getting married anytime? Okay. I know you played some, after high school, you played some open baseball with Buck Stove a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
That bunch. And then, did you ever play softball?
Oh, Lord, we played softball. We played on it was me and all the childhood, a lot of, it was me, my two brothers, Mike Horton, Richie Horton. We went all over to the East Coast playing softball. We were really, really, really good in softball. We probably won, Mike Horton could tell you, he probably 20, 25 state championships.
Yeah.
We literally won everything for like a span until we started having kids. And, you know, my brother's kids was growing up. He had to quit playing a little bit.
Yeah, that was kind of the way my situation. I played with Superior Furniture, and man, we played every weekend. We played in two legs one time, and one year I think we played 180 some ball games. And I don't know how I stayed married, but we would go to Dayton, Ohio, and Richmond, and good bunch of guys. But it just got to a point. I finally said, "Man, I gotta get out of this." You know, it's getting. I mean, every weekend, and we won games, so we would play the whole weekend.
That's
we
wouldn't
go
exactly
come
right.
home after
yeah,
two.
We were,
so.
We were pets and things, and like I said, we'd go to Tennessee. I mean, we would go somewhere every other weekend from April to I think it was called a Chance Crawford tournament in Salem. We go down there one weekend, and we play in this qualifying tournament, and we win the tournament. And so we're coming back the next weekend playing the big Chance Crawford, probably a couple hundred teams. And we're trying to get in it, and we're playing C. You know, they had the classifications. And we go over there and talk to that guy and said, "Yeah, we're coming down here and C." And he said, "You ain't coming down here playing C." He's like, "What do you mean?" He said, "You just beat my four best B teams."
So what positions you play in softball, mainly?
They hid me in the outfield. Mostly left center, left or right, just according which, you know, each year somebody would quit and I would kind of move around a little bit.
You played some open basketball too, didn't you? I noticed you played church league a little bit.
I did. I was more or less the sub. I remember we played in one league. I probably shouldn't say this, but we were playing in a Christian league at Mount Hope. And we had a guy named Jimmy Matheny, who was a radio preacher. Well, needless to say, on my basketball team, you had Bo, which was a really good ball player. You had Tink Brown, Kevin English. I could have went to some Division I schools and played. I never got off the bench, but man, they were really good. Herbie Brooks was on the team.
One of the neighbors' boys I think played with you guys. Yeah.
So our traveling ministry had a really good basketball team.
Y'all didn't actually have a building that you showed up at the church. And
Jimmy had prayed for
you. We'll keep you in our prayers. And but then, when did you get into officiating?
When my twins were probably 6, 7, I think that's when they start cheering. And we were going to these football games, and they might have one official out there. They might have two. They never would have enough. And so a guy asked me, I was actually on the microphone. I was talking on, you know, announcing the games, and he's like, "Why don't you just come and do this?" And I was like, "Well, I could get paid. I don't have to watch them kids cheer. Like, this is a win-win." So I started officiating football that year. I didn't even go to class or nothing. I just did the peewees. And then some people I talked to kind of led me in that direction, and I've been officiating ever since.
Did you ever call basketball?
I still do basketball.
You do basketball?
Yeah, I did the girls' state tournament last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever done the state playoffs of football?
Yes. Did them 2 years ago.
Now you do some college football too, don't you?
I used to. About 10 years ago, I got hooked up with it. And then the WV, they call it the Weeviac if you're out of town, that kind of crumbled, and they made the Weeviac or whatever you want to call it. Well, things got a little tougher then because they did away with the West Virginia guys, and you had to kind of go join the ones in PA up towards Pittsburgh, which is a great thing. Don't get me wrong, for officiating, there was a guy there. He was their supervisor. His name was Gene Steratore, and he'd done a couple Super Bowls. I don't know if you ever heard the name. And he also does the rules analysis on basketball, you know, sometimes about, you know, fouls and this and that. Uh-huh. So for what he brought to the table, you would go to his classes and clinics and stuff up there, and then you would bring all this stuff, this knowledge that you brought. I mean, it'd be amazing if you ever officiated and you really wanted to learn and you just get out and hear those guys, how they break down a play. It's just amazing from anything that you've ever heard around here.
Yeah.
And so I was so intrigued. And then I ended up getting a divorce. And he's an Italian guy, and he reminds you just like Coach Carlo Certo. Probably the most loving guy. You know how most Italians, it's family, and they love you. And I told him, I said, Coach, Mr. Territorio, I said, I just can't do it. My head's mentally not into it. When you officiate college, it changes people's lives. Because if you're a coach and you suck and you're not doing good, they will replace you.
Yeah.
So it's not like you can just go out there and kind of go through the motion. So they will really put that impact of, you can change this kid's life, this man's life. He's got three kids that he might have to scoop up and go take a less paying job in another state. So they were really big into focus. I mean, getting there a couple hours before the game, pregame, all that stuff. So when I started going through a divorce, I just told him I couldn't. And he called me three or four times throughout the year just to check on me. Called me back the next year and was like, hey, if you'd like to come back, I will keep you close to home. You won't travel. And I just said, you know, I just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So I give up. But he, man, he was great to me. I got to do a semifinal in New York. I mean, I was on a playoff crew three times, so he was really good to me. Great guy.
Yeah, people don't, when they watch these college games and pro games on TV, they don't realize what the guys have to go through and to training. And I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's, I mean, they're the best that you, and they've been there, done that. Now, when, let's talk about your daughters just a minute. You had Brittany and Whitney, and they had you got three daughters. What's the other? I don't know the other daughters.
My oldest daughter's Brianna. She don't have much athletic ability in her life. She's not very good at sports. She is an animal lover, so she didn't run into sports.
Nothing wrong with that.
But she's got a state championship under her belt. She played basketball up till the ninth grade, uh-huh. And she was on the Summers County team that won all those games.
So she's older than the twins, and of course they're just finished their career up at WVU Tech, and they, of course, they had the state championships at Summers County, which one was the All-American?
Brittany was.
Brittany was All-American, yes. Two times, I guess, wasn't
she? I think she had three times that she was mentioned in it, okay. Is what I think the paper said.
Yeah.
I'm reading the paper. Like I said, I knew about two of them, but I read that thing and it said three, so maybe it's hard to say.
What are they going to do now that their career's over?
Very good question. They're going to, one, they're getting their vehicle payments. They're getting their insurance and their cell phone payments. The rest of that, I don't know.
Well, is there any chance that they could try out for pro ball?
Nah, Coach, they're too little. They're only 5'8". You know, people don't realize that, but if anybody would get out and watch these kids play, how big they are now, that's just a different level of big.
Yeah.
I mean, even to be a guard, you know, 5'8 didn't used to be small for a lady, but 5'8 small in the basketball world. If you're not 5'10, 6 foot, I mean, 5'8 kids are dime a dozen.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really, you know. So
what about coaching? Do you think they would ever have any interest in coaching?
They're really interested in coaching, but you kind of got to have something to go with it. Like, one of them went into business, one of them wanted to be sort of like a trooper or something like that. And we've had this discussion a lot, and I sounded hard about talking about them, but I'd do anything for the girls. I told them, life, you get one shot at it, do something you love. Because once you get in to making money, you don't just quit what you're doing to go back and try to do something you love.
Yeah.
If you're not going to make a whole lot of money, if you want to be a teacher and be a coach, then do that. You'll learn how to live off what you make. You don't have to make X amount of dollars to be successful. So if you could just find something you love, and if they want to coach, then they should go coach.
Yeah.
And you know, they'll learn how to live off what they make.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But once you get a federal job and start making really good money, you're never going to downgrade to go back to what you want to do.
And the ones out in the working world, you know, the secondary schools has a way where you can coach and not necessarily be a teacher, but you got to have the time. You got to have the type of job that allows you the time, because it takes a lot of time. People don't realize, and it's difficult. Now, you've, in the last few years, you've been doing some running, been in some of these Spartan races. How many of those have you been in?
I've been in several. I think probably eight of them.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the farthest you've run in those things?
The way they're broke down is one of them's like up to 4 miles. I think it's called a sprint, a beast. I can't remember. Is the beast? Anyway, they have three levels. One of them's 4 miles and under. One of them's about 8 miles and under. The other's about 12 miles or 13 miles and under. And what they do is they piece it together. So they call it a trifecta. So if you do one of each, you get the medals. So every time you do like the little one, you'll get like a piece of a medal. Uh-huh. And then if you do the next one, you get another piece. And they're magnets, so they all go together to form their little logo, the Spartan logo. And I got a couple of them.
That's they put it, these barriers, they throw in things, they try to make it as tough on you. I mean, you got to be in pretty daggone good shape to get through even the shortest one. And I didn't do a Spartan run. I did a mud run. It was like I was 61 years old, and it was 1,400 runners in that thing, and they did it in waves. And my son John and his wife were going to do one. It was the 1st of November up around Culpeper, Virginia. And they talked me into coming up there. And I was in pretty good shape then. And went up there. And the first thing I had to do, we had to climb up a rope ladder and down. And they would send, I don't know, 25, 30 people at a time, you know. And I didn't think nothing about it. Just looking around, you know, I had all these hundreds of people. And when I went over the rope, everybody started cheering. And I thought, who are they cheering for? Because they wasn't doing that before, you know. Well, they was cheering for me because I was the oldest guy in the thing. I didn't realize that till later. And then you had to turn over a bunch of tires. And we went through a pond. We climbed in mud. We went over through all kinds. And it was 4 miles. But so when we got done, there was still some doing it. We didn't stay around for the awards or anything because we didn't think we won anything. But it was kind of cold. It was in November. And so went home, went to John's. And the next day we're coming back from Virginia. And John calls me on the telephone. And he said, Dad, you won your age group. And I said, what? And the age group was 54 and over. And I'd won a watch or something that they give me a discount on or whatever. But that was the only one I ever did. Now, they did the same thing again in the spring. But I enjoyed that a lot. But I'm just not in any shape now to do it.
it's great. I tell you, the Boy Scout camp up here, they put on one usually in August. And I tell you what, I've been to Ashland, Carolinas. I went to another one over in North Carolina, been to one at Charlotte, been to one in Virginia, and they don't make them no harder than the one at the Boy Scout. Yeah. If you do those, and I'm telling you, they're just fun. I mean, it's a good time, and trust me, you might throw up. It's hard to tell what you might do. I mean, it's really bad. I remember the first time I ever did one, it was over there, and I think it was the 6 or 8 mile one, and the first mile was literally looked like a goat trail straight up a mountain. I bet it was at least a mile long. And I mean to tell you, the time I got to the top of the mountain, I was thinking, what in God's world have I got myself into? And it was just awful. I mean, it was, but once you did it, man, you enjoyed it. And like everybody knows, me and Chris Gross, he's my sidekick, or I'm his sidekick, I guess. He's liable to call me at any time and say, hey, let's go do this. And I'd be like, all right.
Well, that's good. That's good that you guys are doing. You guys are animals, man. But I'll tell you something else you might want to think about in the future. Throw in something like that that would involve a piece of equipment like a biathlon with a bike and a run. Or I did the Marlington sprint thing. You ran 3.1 miles. You got in a canoe You canoed 4 miles, and then you biked 11 and a half miles. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it really, you get professionals. There's some guys right. come in here, I mean, they burn it up, you know, but the equipment throws in a whole different strategy, you know. Right. You're kind of a victim of your equipment. You know, if something breaks down, it don't matter what good a shape you're in, it happens.
We did a half marathon last fall down at, where you just said, Marlington, up that way, at that Greenbrier Trail, I think is what it's called.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you what, that was probably harder than any of the mud races I'd ever did.
Really?
I mean, whenever you get a stop and catch your breath, maybe use your arms for a minute, you might be climbing over, you know, you get to do something different for about a minute or two to catch your breath and then take off running again compared to just not stopping, just continuing to run, just run. That was tough for me.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the hardest things I ever did was the half marathon. And my goal is to do, I was listening to you, you may have been talking to Chris, you was on one of your podcasts. You were talking about the marathon you ran in D.C. to where you run by all the monuments.
Yeah.
And I told Chris that after I heard the podcast, I was like, dude, we need to do that. If I'm going to run a marathon, that sounds like the ideal place to do it.
That's a great marathon. I ran it. It's a Marine Corps marathon. It's usually around the 1st of November. And I ran it 1 year by myself. And then the next year, I took Larry Foster that used to own Spartan right. Sporting Goods. And that year that he and I ran, I qualified for Boston that year.
I didn't
go to Boston. That's the first regret, only regret I ever had running. I didn't go when I qualified. I kept saying, well, I'll do it next year, you know, and I never did qualify again. And I kicked myself for that. But then the following year, me and Jim Mahalik ran it. And
Coach Mahalik
ran, and he got hooked on that stuff. And it is, it's, you run by all the monuments. It's pretty flat course. It's just so interesting. I mean, you forget that you're pushing it. You got 12,000 people running, but it's mm-hmm. not crowded like New York or Boston.
There's that many runners?
Yeah. But you get all these, the Marines come in, the Army, the Air Force, all these guys, they kind of run in teams, and it's just real colorful. And I would, if that's your first one and you can get up there, that'd be the one to go to, man. I mean, I'm telling you, it's, and I've ran the Maryland Marathon once. And it was a tough one. I would never go back to that one again. But it's interesting. But what's on your bucket list? What I know you made a trip out west not too long ago, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, Coach, I tell Lindsay, that's my girlfriend now. When I was growing up, we didn't get to travel much. You know, just that's just how life was. Well, I had kids and. They were hooked on sports, basketball. We played basketball. Now, we went everywhere in basketball, but to go everywhere to a gym yeah. isn't the same as going. Like, you know, if we drove, I don't even think I ever even got into a plane until I started officiating football to go, you know, to follow that. But so I'd never been anywhere, basically. And so my goal was to go everywhere. That's yeah. what I do. We went out west. Lindsay and I went out to Vegas last, maybe October last year, and we rented a car out there. I'd been to Vegas before, so just sitting in Vegas we're not big gamblers, but just to go there is kind of cool. But we went to a couple places. We went to the Grand Canyon and seen it, drove back to Vegas. And then we went to a place out there out west in Utah. Angel's Landing is what it's called.
Uh-huh.
And you go up this trail for basically 2 miles. And I think they said it had been like 16 people killed on this trail from like the last 15 years or something. Once you got up so high, it literally turned into a trail like rock climbing to where you had to hold on to a chain. And you literally, it was between you and probably about 30 yards long. And you had to pass people along this trail. You'd literally have to hold a chain and suck in, and people would go around you, and you climb all the way up this top. I got 3/4 of the way, but the easy part was all the way up to the chain. It was like almost 2 miles, Lindsay said no. She's scared of heights. She said no. And to go across that one, there's no chain. It's like a 30-yard with no chain. And you just had to skate these rocks. And so, you know me, I'm kind of dumb. So I did it. And I got almost to the top, probably a quarter of a mile from the top. And they told me it was going to be another 45 minutes because people are just interchanging, trying to get up and down. And she had been sitting down there for about 45 minutes by herself. And I was like, I better get on down there to her. But the view, I've never seen anything prettier in my life. I mean, it was just like a Western movie with canyons on both sides. And I seen the Grand Canyon that 2 days before that or a day before that. And the Grand Canyon's so big that you can't even really explain it. It just it looks like a picture. But this here was just amazing. Never seen anything like it.
And that's another thing. Do it while you can, because once you get a certain age, you're not going to, might not be able to do it again. But, well, Tim, man, I hate to break this to you, but our time is about up, man. I've enjoyed talking to you, and we have to get you back because you know we got some interesting stories. We haven't even got into all them calls you missed officiating the football and basketball, but
well, we'd take up a whole year.
But I appreciate you coming. Can I get you back sometime?
Absolutely.
Well, it's been a pleasure. And anybody else out there who would like to be on the show, just give me a call or awbennett50@gmail.com. Love to have you. And until then, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And God bless you.